Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Welcome back to our Abound in Hope podcast. We are grateful to have you with us today, wherever you're listening, in your house, in your car, whatever it might be. I'm sitting here with my friends.
Who are you, first of all?
Oh, my name's Darren Larson.
Yeah. Hey, and I'm Tom Regan.
I am Tom McGregor.
That is amazing. And we're in this podcast right now with a very special guest, because we're in the middle of a podcast with a very special guest. Who are you, very special guest?
My name is Rex Gorman.
Wow.
And tell us why you're very special.
I don't know how to answer that question.
This is me getting, I'm firing back.
You're firing back? What is that? I mean, what did I ever do to you?
Go back and listen podcast again. I'm still.
Oh, that's right.
You're still mad about that.
I'm still okay. Just not mad. I'm more like disappointed or something.
See, that's worse. That's what like a dad always says. Like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
My disappointed face.
I'm not actually mad. I just think less of you now.
That is amazing.
So what are we doing anyway, guys?
Yeah. So we're
thank you, Tom.
Actually, close to the end of a series that we've been doing called "The Word of Their Testimony," and it's been an incredible journey with our church family to hear stories since the beginning of January on what God has been doing in the lives of His people, and I'm so grateful for
we've
it.
We've been doing this for 6 months.
Yeah,
6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah. So thank you to all of you who've shared your stories. We may do a part two of this one day when we kick back after. I think we got a couple more of these to is that right?
Yeah, I think there's a few more in the hopper.
Yeah.
Then we'll be transitioning to a different thing that's similar, but it's a little bit different. We're excited to kind of pull the cover back on that soon.
Yeah. So. Before we talk about that, I'll mention that really quickly, but McGregor, tell us what the word of our testimony is. Where did it come from?
Oh, it comes from Revelation. And it's 12:13. I was messing
I think it's 12. Yeah, it's 12.
Yeah, 12, yeah. Verse 13.
Sorry, I put you on the spot.
The people of God overcome the evil one by the word of their testimony. The blood of the Lamb, not being afraid to die, which is usually the cost of sharing their Jesus stories and accepting His sacrifice rather than trying to make their enemies suffer.
Yeah. It's cool to have people share their testimonies because it's powerful in all kinds of ways. And so to me, it's been encouraging to keep going in faith. I think that is really cool, hearing hard stories, good stories, struggles, victories. All of these things have been pretty impressive. So thank you guys again, church, for being part of this. Today we get to hear from our very special guest, Rex Gorman, who I love dearly. Rex is, all joking aside, Rex is a bit of the heartbeat of our team here at Imprint Church. Like, there's a level of personality and stuff that's just Rex, and I'm thankful for you, brother. So I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're part of our team. You're going to cry, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm crying right now. Yeah.
Thank you for your emotional intelligence.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rex, where are you from? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm not from Nashville, first of all.
Everyone says that.
Somebody's going to hear that and be like, oh,
wait,
Rex is from Nashville.
Rex is from Nashville.
There's been a little Easter egg a couple times in this podcast where we've said you're from Nashville. I don't know if anyone's heard it.
But so it's been kind of a running gag that Memphis and Nashville are the same place. They aren't. So I'm from Memphis. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. Which is about as far in the bottom left corner of Tennessee as you can get without being in Mississippi or Arkansas. Was born there, grew up there, went to college in Nashville for a little while, so I don't know if that's where the confusion came from or what.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I have a question.
You have a question.
In that part that you grew up in, do they have like a Southern accent? Because you don't have any sort of Southern accent. What's up with that?
They do. There's a Southern accent. There's like a kind of a specific West Tennessee accent. And then there's kind of a specific Memphis accent as well. I kind of came out without one.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
What about your parents?
So my mom did not really have an accent.
Okay.
I don't know if that was learned or what.
And was she from there?
Yeah, she's from there.
Oh, interesting.
So I grew up there. My dad is actually from a town a little east of there called Brownsville. He actually just moved back there. If you're in Brownsville, you don't call it Brownsville. You call it
Brownsville.
Yeah, kind of like Louisville, but a little different. It's Brownsville. And he managed to sort of unlearn his accent a little bit, so it's a little bit less. But whenever he gets around people in Brownsville, it kind of comes back out. But he moved to Memphis, met my mom back in the 80s. They got married.
How about your siblings? Do they have accents?
Probably more than me. I think my little sister doesn't, but she's also so I have three siblings. I have an older brother, I have a younger brother, and then a youngest sister. And she doesn't really have as much of an accent. I think it's because she kind of has specialized in linguistics and has had to kind of teach in that context. So I don't know if it's just some of it's been unlearned or what, but yeah.
Now over there, do they consider it an accent? Because we consider an accent here. We think we are the ones that don't have the accent.
Well, everybody thinks that. Yeah. No one thinks they have an accent, but right. That's just kind of the way it works. I think when we first moved here, we were confused when people were saying, you know, you carry stuff out of grocery stores in a
bag.
In a bag.
Yeah.
Or hens lay eggs.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Actually, my wife used to be a teacher.
You say like egg instead.
Flip through a magazine.
We say it the right way.
Flip through a magazine.
Bag and egg.
My wife says that. They say that in Montana. Magazine.
Magazine.
We've been married for almost 20 years and we still debate over that. She's wrong.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, grammar would say so for sure. But yeah, there's an accent for sure down there.
I just, Lindsay.
I somehow got out of there without one. Yeah, it was funny. Even growing up, I didn't really have one. I had friends who's, I'd go hang out at their house and their parents would be like, so where are you from?
Oh my gosh.
You're like, here? Like, yeah, but like, where were you born? I was like, here? Like, where were your parents born? Here?
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was weird.
We should have tried to make him come up with a Southern accent for this entire podcast. Yeah.
I can fake a good one.
Just this one. I bet you can. Yeah. When you hear it enough.
When I hear it enough, or if I get around it, you know, there's the whole code switching thing where you sort of accidentally start talking like somebody.
Yeah.
So that's something I can do every now and then.
Amazing.
So were your parents believers? Did you grow up in a believing home?
Yeah. So my dad grew up in a believing home. My mom grew up in a Catholic home. And she thinks, you know, later in life, her parents both really came to understand and have a relationship with Jesus. It was kind of hard to decipher there. But my mom actually got saved through a television ministry of a church that she ended up going to. She had finished college and had kind of gotten into trying to figure out what was next in her life and was kind of coming up short of answers and started trying to read the Bible. Again, she grew up going to Mass and doing all these things and didn't really have any kind of knowledge of what this was about. And so she went and met with a priest. And this is not a dog on Catholicism in general or all Catholics, but she was basically told, well, let us worry about reading the Bible. You just come to Mass, you just do your thing, and that kind of thing. And that didn't really sit well with her. And so she was trying to figure out what to do and was flipping channels one night and landed on a church's broadcast that was very clearly sharing what the Bible was about and what the gospel of Jesus was. And she got down and prayed, and she marks that as like, okay, yeah, I became a believer. It was a pretty drastic change in her life. My dad grew up in small town and going to church, that kind of thing. His dad became a believer a little later in life, but he saw his dad really transformed by that. And so they grew up solid. And my dad had moved to Memphis after trying college for a minute and that kind of thing, met my mom, and eventually they got married. But we grew up in pretty much going to church. We weren't the crazy, I'm already throwing bombs. We weren't the people who were like, every single time the door is open, we're going to be there. And anytime there's some kind of activity offered, we're going to be there. Because we went to what is a mega church? So we weren't there like all the time, but it was very much like, church was important in our family. Jesus was important in our family, that kind of thing.
Were there open conversations about faith in Christ when you were a kid?
Yeah, there were. And they weren't coercive either, which is what I really look back and appreciate. I remember when I actually like met Jesus, when I actually like started having questions about Jesus, it was after a long time of talking with my mom about it. She wasn't real quick like, hey, let's turn this into a pray the prayer, because I'm pretty sure any kid will follow instructions for the most part. But my brother walked down an aisle, and there was an altar call. So my brother walked down an aisle and was wondering what that was about. And even as a kid, I had an attention problem and that I wanted all of it, and was sure why he was getting all this attention for doing something like walking down an aisle at church. And asked my mom a couple questions about it, and she would give like short answers like, oh, well, you know, Nick believes in Jesus now, and he's declaring that, like he's making that part of his life. He's giving his life to Jesus. Like, oh, okay. And then, you know, that would stew on that for a minute and come back with another answer. Like, what's that mean? Or why does that matter? Or whatever. And my mom, after a long time of asking questions about it, told me about, you know, sin and heaven and hell and separation from God and all this stuff. And after a little while chewing on that, I remember coming and telling her, I think I want to do that too. And I was like, I think I was 7 or 8. And I remember looking back even now, I'm like, I'm pretty, like, I know for certain, like, that's when I understood what I could of the grace of God. And he kind of came into my life and started working. So, yeah.
What was community life for your family as a part of a megachurch in the South?
So it was, It was good, I would say. There, say what you want about mega churches, but often there's a lot of opportunities to get into some community. There's also the great opportunity to fade into the background, but my parents weren't those people. So they took advantage of finding a kind of a church within the church. They found like a small group of people to really live life with. And we did a lot of stuff with we called it Sunday school back then. Yeah, we did a lot of stuff with their Sunday school class. Right. So, so community was a big thing there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy kind of your grown up years in the church community? Was that a helpful thing for you then?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a breeding ground for a lot of things for me, for friendships, good and bad, for relationships and on and off.
Why are you laughing at that? Laughing?
Well, because I've seen that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha.
And it was, so my church was one that offered the like, hey, anytime you want to be here, we'll have something for you to do. Yeah. And thankfully, my parents didn't go like all the way into that, but there was a whole lot of involvement and that kind of thing. And especially up till, I'd say like middle school, that kind of thing. I really started, you know, your brain grows a little bit. You start asking some questions about reality. You have your first breakup of a relationship that's 2 weeks old and you think love doesn't exist anymore, yeah. That kind of thing. But anyway, you
didn't have one of those at 7 years old.
No.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly. So you start asking those questions and that kind of thing and start reading the Bible a little more for yourself. And I think middle school is sort of when a switch flipped. There's been a couple times where it's like, you know, another breaker's opened up where I kind of see the vastness of God, the vastness of his grace for us. And I think that was one of those. I think that was just appropriate with the age that I was at the time. But even so, started actually reading the Bible for myself, started taking things a little bit more seriously, asking questions about stuff. And, you know, you joke that I'm the emotionally intelligent one. I was kind of an emotional, I've always been an emotional guy. I'm not really ashamed of that. I was kind of an emotional kid.
It's nothing to be ashamed
of. Yeah,
about.
Because of that, I was around to notice if someone was hurting, that kind of thing. And had a couple of youth leaders see like, hey, you know, he'd come up and talk to me like, hey, you know what, man, you should like, you seem really to enjoy this and you seem to really be like kind of tuned for this. Have you thought about like a call to ministry? And I was like 14 or 15.
Wow. Crazy.
And I was like, this seems interesting. And like, you know, so I started thinking about it and praying about it, that kind of thing. And I decided, yeah, I think that's what I'm supposed to do. But what that did is it kind of made Christianity my hobby. And I got really good at Christianity. Mm-hmm. I got really good at being the kid who, you know, raised your hands at the right time, or I got during a worship song, or sort of.
So would you
worship.
Say that it kind of became more performative, like more performance oriented?
A little bit. I don't think I would have said that at the time, yeah. But I really do. Mm-hmm. I think it was a bit more about like, I'm going to put on a good face and be like, you know.
Because this thing that was originally like really heartfelt and genuine now
yeah.
has some external like
validation
thing attached to it. Now you're going to seek validation through being recognized as the guy who's called to ministry, maybe.
Yeah, and that's sort of exactly what it turned into. Mm-hmm. I was like, I think this is a chance for me to create an identity around this, because mm-hmm. I wasn't an athlete. I ran track and stuff in middle school and in high school. I wasn't like a star athlete or anything. So
they should have had a race where you just the last person still running wins, and that would have been you.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Everyone else just
falls down. I was a sprinter back in the day. I thought running more than 400 meters was like the worst thing in the world.
And now, ironically, you run miles and miles.
Yeah, no, that's been a change for sure. But yeah, I don't know if it was just me looking for some kind of identity. It was also an outlet for music as well. Mm-hmm. I started playing music. And
when did that start? When did music start?
Started, I think, around age 13 or 14. Someone, again, remarked, like, hey, you have a pretty good voice. Like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you should do this thing.
When did you discover that you had perfect pitch? Because that's not very common, right?
I discovered
a very, very small percentage of the population,
yeah,
right?
I discovered that I had perfect pitch when I was 18, and it's because my wife told me I did. Mm-hmm. She was not my wife at the time, obviously. But we went out. So as a result of like, you know, the whole music thing, I started doing choirs and ensembles and whatnot, and was doing one at school where Kinsey and I both went to the same high school. And we went out in the hall to rehearse something like soprano, alto, tenor, bass, like leading these sections. And, she said, oh man, I forgot the pitch pipe. I was like, well, just sing a G. Like it's just sing a G. And she was like, no one can do that. And I went, and she was like, I'm going to go get the pitch pipe. So anyway, but afterwards she was like,
"Was that a G you just sang?"
Yeah, that was a G. Yeah. Afterwards she was like, do you know what Perfect Pitch is? And so, yeah, there's that. So
that's amazing.
But yeah, so I started doing the music thing and kind of started doing the worship leading thing there. And that kind of added to the whole identity. It's like, hey, Rex, look at this. He could be this guy who's at church and is like Mr. Youth Group or whatever.
Mm. And your youth group, I imagine, was big, right?
There was a community there.
There was probably a little bit of a belonging that you found in that spot.
Yeah, totally. Hmm. Yeah, I felt some belonging there, but then also kind of felt odd looking back. And again, I wouldn't have said this at the time. Looking back, kind of felt it seems a little political the way I was treating it, where it was sure. Like, you know, I'm gonna be the most holy guy mm-hmm. here. I'm mm-hmm. gonna do the most good things and be the guy who stands out.
What did the politicization or the hobbyization of faith do to the relational aspect?
I think it was around. I think it hurt it in quite a big way.
It didn't obliterate it.
It didn't obliterate it.
But what did it do?
Relational aspect to what?
Of faith.
Like the relational side of faith
in Jesus.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. There was this pressure that was not, I would say, was not scriptural to clean myself up to do these things instead of just going and being honest about what was going on in my life. You know, I've shared pretty candidly on here there was some struggle with pornography or with lust or whatever you want to call it in those kind of ways. And it was never like hard pornography or anything like that, but it was just general lust and some messed up stuff. But at the same time, you know, I'm the kid leading worship and talking about sharing your faith and all these kind of things and doing the Bible drill and that kind of thing. And so putting up these appearances while inside sort of feeling completely fake, but at the same time, not understanding grace enough to understand that it was okay to actually come clean and understand like, okay, well, I'm going to be accepted here. Because what happened was, it became something, my image there kind of became something to protect. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense of like, you know, I am broken and there's something wrong here mm-hmm. and I need help, because that would risk some standing. You know, maybe I won't get to lead worship anymore. Maybe I won't get to play bass in the worship band. I won't get to lead these things or whatever because I'm screwed up. And so that was kind of put into my head on accident just by rehearsal, if that makes sense. The whole performative part of like, hey, I need to keep up the good work. I need to always have it together and never mess up, or you know, I won't have a spot here.
It wasn't something somebody told you; it was something you conjectured on.
Absolutely,
your own.
Yeah. And like, so personal holiness was important. It is important. It still is. It was something that they talked about, but it was never like, if you screw up, you're not allowed here. You're not allowed to come back. That was never said. Nothing like that was ever said. None of the youth pastors or anything said anything along the lines of like, get it together, keep it together. And like, you know, the whole Frozen thing, conceal, don't feel, whatever. No one said anything like that.
I love the Disney reference in the middle of that. That was amazing. It's funny how quickly the human heart goes to that. Like, it kind of reminds me of the, who was it said the human heart is an idol factory?
Tim Kelvin.
Probably Tim Keller, yeah.
Yeah. I heard Calvin and Keller. That's so funny. But I think that the human heart tends to build things, images, or things that we feel like we ought to be, which is so funny because it sounds like the church you were going to, the Omega Church, whatever pick on, sounds like it had a good foundation for you to actually build into your life. And yet there was something in your human heart that said, no, I have to be a certain way, look a certain way, do a certain thing in order for people to accept me.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It just sort of was tacit. It just showed up.
Yeah. Was there a time in your life when that broke? Like, so you kind of mentioned struggles that you had, whether it's lust or pornography or just life. Was there ever a time when you're like, man, I realized that I needed to be saved?
There's been several.
that's relatable.
The first one that kind of revealed the fault lines was in high school. I went to a Christian high school and I went to a Baptist church. and it was a non-denominational high school, but it was pretty much Presbyterian.
Oh.
There was a lot of the staff there was Presbyterian, a lot of teachers. And
That's
where Kinsey went
as well.
Nice. Yeah.
How big was the school?
Not super big.
Okay.
It was how big our graduating class was. That's it wasn't like tiny, but it wasn't huge. It wasn't public school sized or anything. Mm-hmm. But the Bible teacher there in the senior year, it was like the class everyone took. It was kind of a capstone class. And he was a Presbyterian. And I thought that was a real shame because he seemed nice.
That's
but
awesome.
Obviously he was wrong because he was Presbyterian. And, you know, we Southern Baptists had it right. But then I heard him pray and I was like, oh no, this guy knows Jesus way better than I do. Hmm. Like this guy loves Jesus way more than I do. Hmm. And this guy is like way more sure of Jesus' love for him than I am. Hmm. And that was sort of, we didn't get along well, and I kind of regret that. And, you know, I'd love to say we have talked about it since then, but I don't think he remembers me, but.
he does. He curses your name every night before he goes to bed.
Probably. He actually just retired. But I remember getting remarks and stuff like that on papers that I'd write, you know, he was just trying to draw out ethical stuff in these high school seniors who are about to go off to college, like trying to draw out these ask them hard, weird questions. And I'd like be really confident in something. And then he'd shoot it down kind of thing. Oh, I forgot. This guy was also, I was going for like the religious affairs guy at our school for my senior year. And he was on the interview panel before I really knew him. And he like asked me, I can't remember what the question was. He asked me something that just completely disarmed me though. And I didn't get it. And I blamed him a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
And I always said, yeah, it's just because I'm Baptist. But anyway, yeah, this guy knew Jesus way better than I did is what I figured out. And that kind of started chipping away at my armor, I guess, that I had built up of like, here's who I am. I'm this guy who's called to ministry and blah, 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 blah. And that did a couple things. First, that made me ask like, well, man, I'm pretty screwed up. Am I actually supposed to do this ministry thing? And on top of that, you know, everyone's going off to college knowing exactly what they're going to do. And I had no idea. So I was kind of punching in the dark and decided, well, the way I'll do ministry is I'll just be really good at some other job and I'll fund stuff that way. And but yeah, this guy, this Bible teacher sort of broke my brain a little bit, and ended up being a business major at Memphis, University of Memphis, and sort of worked my way through college in kind of an aimless way. Kept doing the worship thing at a college ministry. Kind of grew tired of what I was doing, and an opportunity came up for me to go to move to Nashville, go to Belmont, pursue music there, played in some bands, did some recording, had a couple of internships, and it kind of also turned to ash in my mouth a little bit. I was like, I don't think this is what I'm actually supposed to do with my life. Not sure what's going on here. The whole time, you know, there's this secret, I guess when I was in Memphis, there was this secret sin living in the background that was sort of eating me alive. Not like getting worse or anything, but just kind of gnawing at me, knowing, like whispering in my ear the whole time, like, hey, you're not who you say you are. Like, you're a fake. Like, let's be real. You're not believing any of this with your life, that kind of thing. So as I'm in Memphis, that's one thing, because I'm in community. I moved to Nashville and sort of fell out of church. Not on purpose. It was just kind of...
Were you married at this time?
Was not, no.
Yeah.
I was dating Kinsey when I moved to Nashville, but...
You guys were
but
high
she
school,
stayed in
high school
Memphis.
Sweethearts. Yeah,
we weren't high school sweethearts.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, we didn't start dating until our senior years of college.
Oh,
actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, we reconnected.
You just knew each other in high school.
We knew each other in high school. Funny. And reconnected. Okay. And yeah, I asked her out, and like a week later, we both went back to college. She went 300 miles one direction. I went 200 miles the other direction. Mm. So, it was smart. So in Nashville, sort of again, fell out of community. Didn't really know how to start over. Because I'd built kind of some safe space, some scaffolding in a church, and didn't have that in Nashville, and did not have a habit of being in community. And so that dissonance about who I was as a person just kind of grew louder and louder. Those lies were like, no, you're worthless. Like, you don't know what you're doing with your life. You moved here. You left all your friends. Your girlfriend lives really far away from you. And you are spending you know, someone's money, like some scholarships and some other stuff. You're spending a lot of money to go to this really expensive school, and you hate it here. You don't know what you're doing. You're a fake. And that was sort of what was playing over and over again in my head for the time that I was in Nashville. Even though I was doing cool stuff, it just kind of slowly was like, yeah, this isn't what I'm supposed to do.
It's a bummer soundtrack, man.
It was a horrible soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And looking back again, if I understood what community was and was like, okay, well, I can come clean here. I don't have to build up this facade. Then it could have been a different situation, but it wasn't. Yeah.
So was there a turning point in there then?
There was. I moved back to Memphis after graduation. Again, still kind of listless, kind of like frustrated by stuff I had tried.
After 4 years at Belmont?
So I did 3 years at Memphis and then did a year and a half at Belmont. Mm-hmm. Moved back, still not sure what I'm doing. I knew I wanted to marry Kinsey, but that seemed impossible just because, like, I was like, well, I'm fake, so she's going to find out one day. Mm. So finally, you know, it was funny how God kind of kept putting me back in situations to lead worship and do that kind of thing, because I ended up filling in for a friend at a college ministry, and then the pastor came up afterwards like, hey, what would you think about, like, doing this every week? This was cool. I'd known the guy for, like, this was cool. There was something different here. And I think you might have a knack for this. You should come back. So was still doing that. But then again, in the whole back of my head, feeling like a horrible human, like, yeah, this is, I'm up on stage singing great stuff, but, you know, in private, bad things are happening. I'm trying to get my life in order, trying to figure out what's going on. And, so one day I got sick of it enough that I told Kinsey about it. She didn't run away screaming, thankfully. But that was sort of enough of an onus for me to do something about it. I told her about it. I told a couple other key influential people in my life that there was a struggle deep inside, like with porn, with these things, and people were did the exact opposite of what I had been convinced they were going to do.
Yeah.
You know, they took me in and walked with me through stuff. And yeah, at that point, you know, I was able to kind of dust myself off and actually have some self-esteem for a minute, for a change. And
because you'd experienced grace.
Because I'd experienced grace. Yeah.
Doesn't it go against what your expectations would be? I mean, seriously. Well, that's what grace is. But also, you're like, you picked yourself up and dusted yourself off after you confess.
Seriously.
Like, you're trying it's like the dust won't wipe off before you confess.
Pretty much.
It's like you keep trying, but suddenly you could.
Yeah.
When you confessed it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so
exactly.
Counterintuitive.
Yeah, and I didn't broadcast it. You know, yeah. I'm more.
But you told people that
had influence.
Trust. Yeah.
And people that I trusted and that had some influence that could help me do something about it. And I'm more open with it now just because I understand, like, again, there's power in the word of our testimony and not living our lives unto death.
Hey, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, right? But I was able to by God's grace and with some help, some counseling, some other stuff, make my way out of that and got a job. I got a job with AppleCare, actually. So this was like...
Were you a genius?
I was not a genius. No, I worked at home. I worked at home
t-shirt?
Before it was cool.
Before the pandemic and everything.
Before the pandemic and everything. I was doing that and I was like, you know what? I didn't know what I was supposed to do in my life. I didn't feel like I could step into like a ministry role. Still was feeling not good enough for that. Was still doing the worship thing on the side just as a thing. And knew I wanted to marry Kinsey. So, asked her, she said yes. That was cool. And then I've told my story here on the podcast before, just about everything that happened with my mom. But that was a couple weeks before we were supposed to get married. My mom died in a car accident, and we ended up going through with the wedding anyway on the date that we were supposed to. Sorry, I'm not spending a ton of time on that story because you'll hear a grown man cry on a podcast for like the fourth time.
It's okay.
But anyway, we ended up getting married, and once again, you know, I'm trying to be faithful. I'm in community now.
Where are you guys living? You in Memphis?
We were back in Memphis.
Yep,
yeah,
totally.
I'm in community. I'm serving at the church that I grew up at.
The big mega church you're at. Yep.
Yeah, trying to just do something, and you know, we're tithing, like we're doing all the right stuff. I'm still leading worship occasionally, and it's one of those things where I sort of nothing made sense anymore, I guess, if that makes sense. Like
it makes a lot of sense.
When you lose someone, if you've been through this, you understand, like, stuff kind of freezes in place for a minute, mm-hmm. and you can kind of look at everything really intricately, mm-hmm. and just look and take stock of everything. And I was like, this life is not the life I want to be living. Not because it was bad. It was like, it was really good. You know, we're newlyweds. We're having a blast serving at a church together. We're growing together. I understand grace now. So like, there's just a lot of radical honesty, and God's doing cool things as a result of that. But yeah, I realize, like, I'm not happy doing what I'm doing. I'm not. Yeah, you guys know me, I'm an extrovert, so working at home was pretty bad for me. But, like, just in general, I didn't...
People are calling into AppleCare, and you're like, you want to talk for a few minutes?
Yeah, basically.
So how's your day going?
I'm supposed to get you off the phone in 10 minutes. I'll never see you again. But life wasn't bad. Life was good, and we were doing a lot of cool stuff, but it was sort of just not fulfilling in any way whatsoever. There's a part of the story that I left out that I guess I can revisit now. We had, in the process of healing and everything like that, we had been asking, I continued to kind of ask God, like, all right, what do you want from me? And part of that was this weird idea that I was supposed to be in a place where loving Jesus was not popular. And it wasn't really like foreign missions was not something that was super appealing. Didn't feel like it fit my giftings or whatever. But I had met a few people towards the end of my stay in Nashville who lived in places like Las Vegas, lived in places like Portland, or Seattle or New York. And they were all loving Jesus really well. Mm-hmm. And it was a really unpopular place to do it. And that was floating around in my head, like, man, I don't need a passport to go to these places. I don't have to get a visa. I could just go get a job somewhere and love Jesus well and, like, you know, be a missionary in that way. And ended up meeting some guy who was trying to plant a church in Seattle. and
this was at a missions conference.
This was at a missions conference. Yeah. This was not who you're thinking of, though.
Oh, different.
Different guy. And this was before marriage, that kind of thing. And so we had decided, Kenzie and I decided, you know, we're going to get married. We're going to get married and work for a little while, and then we're going to move to Seattle, not for the sake of, like, being ministers or anything like that. We're just going to move and help this guy, like, be great lay people, show up all the time and tithe and, like, help make disciples and whatever else he needed. And then when mom died, it was sort of, we kind of understood our calling was like, hey, my dad kind of needs us right now. Mm-hmm. You know, that became pretty clear from our conversation, then from conversation with the guy that we had talked to about coming out here. So we had just shut the books on that. That was gone. So that's information I should have said a minute ago. But anyway, we prayed about it, and I had a friend who was in ministry. He was on staff at the church we grew up at, and said, actually, there's this opening in middle school ministry. Like, is that something you want to talk to the pastor about? You want to pray about? I was like, I don't know, I guess. So we talk, and we prayed about it. Kenzie and I prayed about it and decided that I would quit Apple and take a huge pay cut and get a part-time job at a church.
Which is really saying
really,
something.
Really,
seriously. Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
Really smart when you just gotten married too. But yeah, we take a huge pay cut, step into a part-time job at a church doing middle school ministry, and it was amazing. It was awesome. I was right there with those kids who were not sure who they were, you know, building their identity as their brains are growing up, back with those kids and trying to help them understand grace in a way that I had not. And like, understand, like, hey, it's okay to, you know, you're not supposed to have this figured out. Like, Jesus absolutely loves you and is pursuing you, and you can know him. Like, you can really know him. And so it was awesome. still leading worship on the side, doing all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we were there for like 2 years doing
and
that.
And if anyone's listening going, hey, don't we have a student ministry role open here? We've already asked them, and the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, we had, again, we were there, and we were there for like 2 years. I had started taking some ministry seminary classes and was getting more opportunities to do cool stuff around through the big church that we had, the influence that it had. And I was having a great time doing it, really was feeling fulfilled by it, until I guess it was the fall of 2015. No, fall of 2014, I guess it was. Fall of 2014, we did this big youth outreach event, and I did so much work getting it done and like getting the logistics planned and having all the stuff, getting, you know, the day of, like, it's just a madhouse getting everything done, getting the food, getting the speaker in, getting the band in, helping them do all this stuff. And so I was running around like crazy and helping people get stuff done, which sounds a little familiar to what I do now. But like, we pulled it off. It was amazing. You know, some kids came to know Jesus. A lot of kids were asking questions about Jesus. And I was like, man, this is great. Went and laid home, went down, laid my head on my pillow, and realized, like, I didn't pray at all today. Mm. I was like, I didn't, you know, we did all this stuff, and I just kind of did it. Mm-hmm. We didn't pray at all. That messed with me for like a week. And Kenzie asked me what was wrong. I was like, I don't think we're doing hard things, like, at all. I don't think we're doing anything hard enough. Like, if I'm able to do my ministry job without praying, if I'm able to do my ministry job without any kind of dependence on God, then something's wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean that the church is bad, the job's bad. Like, something's wrong with our fit here. Mm. 'Cause we need to, the reason we started doing this, reason we stepped into this was like dependence. And we're not there. So that messed with me for, you know, a month or two, whatever. And we decided at the beginning of 2015, we were going to pray for hard things. Hmm. I think I said something about this in the first email I sent to Imprint, actually. We decided we were going to start praying for hard things to step into hard things.
Like a pandemic?
Yeah, thanks, sure. Rex. Sure. That was my fault back in 2015. But no, we wanted dependence. We wanted more dependence on God, not less. We didn't want to just do stuff in our own strength. And a couple weeks into praying for that, I met another church planner who was planning a church out here. Hmm. He had planted a church and was looking for someone to help him kind of, I don't know, help with the load of things. And it was called The Landing Church. Hmm. And it was in Bothell, Washington. And so, like, well, this seems like a hard thing. Hmm. We prayed about it, and it was a weird situation. We prayed about it, and we didn't feel like a huge, like, skywriting, this is what you need to go and do with your life, Rex. But we also didn't feel like there was any moral reason for us not to go. And having conversations with people, I'll never forget one I had with my old boss named Jay. He said, Rex, here's the thing. This is a big church, and there's a bunch of people. If we put your job right now on a job board tomorrow, we'd have a bunch of applicants, and they'd want to do it. No one's lining up to go help this guy in Bothell, Washington, where it's really expensive to live and yada, 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 all the things you're supposed to say about the Northwest, whatever. And that kind of changed the way I think about calling. Like, all right, well, it wasn't so much like, here's this path that you have to choose the exact right adventure. You have to knock on the right door, that kind of thing. But we just decided to step out in faith, trusting, like, hey, if God's called us to hard things, he's going to meet us in these hard things. So we sold almost everything, gotten our little red Toyota Prius, and drove from Memphis, Tennessee to Seattle, Washington. And we got here January of 2016.
Just the fact you had a red Prius in Tennessee.
I had a Subaru in Tennessee as well, by the way.
Well, both.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's designed for the great
Northwest. You were already Northwest.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
I was the most Northwest person in Memphis, for sure.
That's so funny.
I was very pale.
That's so. So in January 2016, weather's horrible. You cruise out here.
And
what happened?
So we started ministering at The Landing, and I kind of took the role as minister of, I always said minister of miscellaneous.
Yeah.
But I raised support for some of my salary and had some other of it come from the church and from partners and that kind of thing.
Was your church plant a Southern Baptist church? Was it connected through big church?
It was sent through North American Mission Board, which is a Southern Baptist association. Yep. Yeah.
And so did the pastor work for the Southern Baptist, anything like that?
We reported to them.
Yeah.
It's the way the SBC works is it's sort of just an affiliation is what it is.
That's
there's
right.
not like any governing body. Each church is autonomous, but there's a sharing of resources and that kind of thing. And so we benefited greatly from that. And I'll say, and if Andy listens to this, we've had this conversation before. The couple years we spent at the Landing were absolutely incredible, and then also absolutely really hard.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of really hard things.
Be careful what you pray for.
Yeah, it was that kind of thing. Yeah, but like we found ourselves, you know, where before I was, and there's nothing wrong with this. I was talking to, before I was talking to like a middle schooler about like, hey man, I saw what you're looking at on your phone, and this is going to ruin your life if you're not careful. To praying for this lesbian woman whose partner had drunk bleach the night before and killed herself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's a whole different set of problems. I find myself in the trenches in these ways where I'm like, I did not see myself here doing these things, praying for these things. You know, praying for people who were. We did a lot of ministry with homeless down in downtown, and so we did a lot of talking with and praying for people who were addicted to drugs or struggling to find housing, or some people who, you know, would straight up tell you, like, I'm pretty sure I'm demon possessed, like that kind of thing. So we're stepping into this stuff where it's like, oh my gosh, I guess we're getting what we prayed for. Like, this is really hard stuff. But it was amazing. We felt like stretched pretty thin, but we felt really purposeful in everything we were doing as well. The Landing was really cool. It started to wear, I think, and a little bit just from the whole jack of all trades nature of my existence, where I would just pick stuff up and try to ended up doing way too much, and started to approach burnout probably a year and a half in, and just kept pushing through. Mm. So,
looking back on your experience at the Landing, were there moments where God was trying to redirect you?
I think,
or putting the right people in your path to like, what was the dynamic there?
Man, I think that, part of the learning that we were experiencing here, was just sort of the nature of the church in the Northwest.
Mm.
There's a cooperational, friendly, like prayerful, let's walk arm in arm as long as we believe, like, if we believe the same things about Jesus and him crucified, like we're on the same team. Whereas, you know, I make the joke in the South, you know, the Southern Baptist Church on First Avenue is not friendly to the Southern Baptist Church on Second Avenue and that kind of thing. And don't even get me started on the Presbyterians again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a cooperational thing here where it's like, hey, like there are a lot of people who, and you know, this wasn't like a pull towards universalism. Don't let me say this, but it was like, there's a lot of people out here who are not part of your denomination who love Jesus just a lot and are working for good here and are working for the salvation of people here. So there was some of that, the dismantling of any kind of like, I don't know if you'd call it denominational prejudice or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So that was really good. But as far as the whole...
You say like, hey, we're all playing on the same team. We should be cooperating.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was like a big thing. Like that was something that, the Landing did really well. Andy did really well. Like, let's partner together to take care of, to serve our city, that kind of thing. I was privileged to kind of learn some of that under him. That's how I met Tom, actually. Other than that, I think there was, as far as redirection when it comes to burnout, I don't think so, man. I think I kind of had to learn it myself.
So there was like an element where you guys are praying.
Yeah.
But also you're taking on a lot because that's the nature of church planting.
Yeah.
And God's like, I'm going to allow this to happen. And I'll be with you.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spare you from the pain of burnout.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a season of, probably 5 months, 4 or 5 months, something like that, where I was like in deep depression, from trying to do too much, from, it was partially trying to do too much, and then some of it was butting heads with Andy actually on some philosophy stuff on like why we're doing things this way, mm-hmm. Why things are continuing to go this way. And yeah, it was really hard. It was really growing. I remember I was taking a class at a Gateway Seminary down in Portland. Actually, it's in Vancouver. I shouldn't say Portland because you're from Portland and you'll get mad at me. It's in Vancouver right across the river. And it was a counseling class, and they asked for a test subject, as it were. And she said, we can talk about something real, we can talk about something made up. So I started talking about what was going on, and she said, yeah,
like, you sound like a pastor who's burning out right now.
Yeah, basically, that was it.
I won't tell you his name, but...
But we started feeling, as a result of that, not just from being tired, not just from being worn out, we started feeling like, you know, God might be getting ready to move us somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was a similar feeling to what we had when we were like, man, we're not doing hard stuff. Mm-hmm. Sort of a moment where we're confused about what's next, and we're not really sure about the long term of where we are. That's kind of church planning in general. You know, you're always kind of have job boards open a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if this falls through, can I get a job at Starbucks?
Yeah.
And so similar.
I still think that 10 years in, so just so you know.
Like, my fallback's UPS.
There you go. What can Brown do for you? So at the end of 2017, our church actually lost. We had been meeting at a place in Kenmore, and that place had to shut down. So we actually lost our meeting place, looked everywhere. It was the same. It was a different problem, but the same problem that you know we have right now, where you can't find a place to meet anywhere. Yeah. So we ended up meeting in another church on a Saturday night. We decided that's what we were going to do. And, you know, I'm praying like, God, you know, this could be great. This could be like a change in rhythm for us. This could be what we need as a church. Or if this isn't what we're supposed to do, will you just give us a nudge, like where Kenzie and I are supposed to go, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to be serving. All this time, like, we love the Northwest. Like, we love this area. We loved what we had been doing. So the thought of leaving here was pretty sad. We'd gotten some phone calls about some stuff, but none of them seemed like a good fit. And so we pray, like, God, give us a clue as to what we're supposed to do here. And then in February of 2018, Andy told me that they had a family medical emergency. Basically, his father-in-law had no one to care for him and had was having liver failure and needed a transplant. But in order to get on the transplant list, he had to have people to care for him there and had no one there. So they said, yeah, we're going to drop everything and move. And we had already had a couple blows just from moving locations. You're going to lose some people. Moving to Saturday night was a huge blow for us because it's like even for a place where church isn't like the normal rhythm, church people are church people. And if it's not Sunday morning, they're like, what are we doing here? This is weird. So we had been kind of dwindling in numbers that way. And Andy leaving was kind of the final blow. It was kind of the elbow from the top rope. Of like, this is
from the peanut butter falcon. Yeah.
This is not gonna go well. So Andy talked to was like, man, do you wanna take on as pastor of the Landing? And I was like, I really don't think that's what I'm supposed to be doing with my life, man. And at this point, you know, there was a lot going on, a lot of partnerships and stuff behind the scenes, and I'm like, I'm watching our church get smaller, and I'm like, man. Can we like divert these people to another church? Can we divert these resources to another church? And that's it. It kind of is what ended up happening in a way. You know, was praying that and talking with that. There's a guy whose name is Jonah Easley. He is actually still here. He's down in Bellevue, who was planning to start a church in Bellevue. And Andy connected with him. And they basically handed off the people that were left to Jonah and said, do what you want with them. And then he left. And so Jonah started the process like, okay, we're going to be meeting in Bellevue. We're going to be trying to reach people down there.
It's a big commute.
It was a big commute from like Kenmore, Bothell area. Yeah. And so the people who were excited and were on board stayed on board, and he kind of built a launch team out of that to relaunch or to launch a church somewhere else. And the more he and I talked about it, we were like, I just don't think this is where we're supposed to be. Like, I am not ready to start another church plant from scratch. Like, emotionally, physically, we're just tired. Kinsey's, you know, 400 weeks pregnant at that point, with Naomi. And, he understood. He was really honest. We had coffee just a little while ago, actually. And he was like, man, where you need to be exactly where God has you. And somewhere in the mix of all that, I ran into Tom Regan at a coffee shop. I don't know if you want to.
Okay, so wait, before you get there, unless you had a comment, because I'm going to go back to another question.
Yeah.
I remember when we hired Tom McGregor during COVID, which was a really wise
good
decision.
Timing.
Yeah, it was perfect timing.
Indeed.
I said to him, you've got like 3 months before you are so accustomed to the imprint culture that you can no longer help us understand where we're off. Do you remember this? I had this conversation.
Oh, I remember it. And I was like, that's not going to happen.
Oh, but you still dress the same way, but I think you've become one of us. Now you're one of us. You
well,
know?
Well, for sure.
Yeah.
But there's an element where you don't lose some of that eyesight.
You're always third culture in some way.
Well, so why I'm bringing this up is because what I told to McGregor is like, Tom and I would love some feedback from you on how our church is doing. Like, you've had experience down at a church in Portland, and we're so immersed in it that we can't see some. So I'm going to ask the same question to you, Rex. So you come up here from the deep south to the deep not south. And can you go back to that time when you were first here in Seattle and say, man, this place, here's some things that I really love about this place, or here's some things that I really see needs ministry? Or were there places there that you kind of said, man, this is what the hard thing that Kinsey and I were called to? I mean, you're in it now. Like, you're
we're 6 years in now.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
When we got here, so in the south, there is a type of cultural Christianity that exists here. I'll say that first
for sure.
of all the bad. There's something of that everywhere. In the south, it was helpful to your career. Even like I'm part of a church. I'm a small group leader at a church. I teach Sunday school at a church. It was something almost that you could put on your resume and it would help you.
Yeah.
And so if you talk to anyone in the south, like, oh yeah, I'm a Christian. Like, I know Jesus. I go to church with this person. My grandfather is a deacon at this place and has been, and you know, our family's been doing this thing, and there's a pew named after us at this First Baptist Church of Biloxi, Mississippi, or whatever. And we liked the idea that we would be able to get up here and talk to people and kind of know right where they were if we tried to talk to them about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we think that's still kind of the case. Mm-hmm. Talking to someone up here about Jesus, who doesn't, again, there are church people up here, but talking to someone up here about Jesus, inviting someone to church is sort of like inviting someone to a chess club, where you're like, oh, it's really cool. There, you'd say, hey, you want to come play chess with me? And they'd say, oh, it's really cool that you play chess. Mm-hmm. I don't really play chess. Mm-hmm. No one in my family plays chess.
Oh, there's still chess clubs?
Yeah, are there still chess clubs around? I don't know. But yeah, it's really great that you play chess, but I don't really play chess. That's not something I'm interested in doing.
Huh.
So we loved being weird. I think we loved meeting people where like there's no cultural help for them if they say, yeah, I know Jesus. Mm-hmm. And from that, you kind of have a really honest starting place.
It's just a lot clearer of where people stand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lot clearer where people stand. We were thinking into the future. We love the idea of raising our kids in a place where it's kind of weird to love Jesus well.
Mm-hmm.
Not for the sake of like making our kids freaks, but we love the idea of there being not a lot of like quote unquote cultural power around Christianity, whereas in the South it gets mixed in, and it happens here too, but in the South it gets mixed in a lot with politics and again, like career path and that kind of thing. It becomes
kind
of a
social
institution.
You had a desire to be missionaries, right? This idea that you're going to, so what's interesting about the North American Mission Board and kind of the SBC is they still do send up like large mission teams to do mission trips up here.
Yeah.
So actually I ran into Rex at Social Grounds in downtown Bothell just after he had heard that Andy was leaving the Landing. And Rex had like, I don't know, like 20 college students.
It was a lot.
There was a lot of them because down there in the South, they recognize over here where we are, like we're in pagan land, right? Like it's a mission trip on the same continent. You don't have to get a passport, like Rex said, but that's what I've always appreciated about Rex.
He was leading a team of 20 college students, you said?
Yeah, they would send, SBC, North American Mission Board, would send mission teams from churches in the South to come here and help church plants. And so they would do these mission projects, which we think up here about, you go to different countries, right? Well, or you can go across the street. I mean, really, what I've seen in Rex and Kinsey that I appreciate is a sense of mission. Like, we are coming from a different culture, really, to a different place where there's no cultural power behind Christianity. There's very less nominal Christianity, less cultural Christianity, although you did say it does exist here for sure.
Yeah, it just takes a different form, I think. Yep.
But you're clearly in a non-Christian area. Post-Christian, maybe. I don't know what you even call it. Never Christian.
It's almost pre-Christian, I would say.
In some ways.
Yeah, I'd say it's pre-Christian in some ways. And yeah, there's this kind of a church establishment around, I think. But
it's still weird.
It is weird.
It's weird to people.
The other thing we loved about it is what we talked about before, that we really liked, like, we think we fit in here, was we sort of colored outside. We're not heretics, I promise. But we sort of like... We felt kind of like black sheep in the SBC in a few theological ways. Mm-hmm. And up here, we can fellowship with people that think different things.
Like Presbyterians.
Or like Anglicans, you know? We can think differently about some secondary issues, and it's not the end of the world. And that's not that was not the case culture-wise at the church that we were at. In a lot of SBC churches, it's like, well, if you're Calvinist, then there's the door. Go find a Calvinist church. Or if you're, you know, if you're Arminian, then... there's the door, go find a Arminian church, whatever. If you're cessationist, get out of here. If you're not speaking in tongues, get out of here, whatever. Like just majoring on everything was sort of the culture. Whereas up here, there's just a lot of teamwork, and the people who are at church are there because they want to be there. The people who are gathering at church are not gathering for a cultural reason, but it's because they understand that something happens when the saints get together under the word. And we noticed that the very first time we came to Seattle, meeting in a church in someone's living room. And it's something that we love about it here still.
Mm. So. Cool. What's your heart for Seattle nowadays? You've been here 6 years now. You're, my phrase a minute ago was one of us. Now, you feel like you're here. Your kids are, they don't know anything else. They don't know the South.
Yeah, they're Northwesterners.
Yeah. So what is your vision for this area now? What do you see in ministry? What are you and Kinsey like? This is what we dream big when we think of what God could do here through our lives.
Man, I don't know how else to say it other than we freaking love the local church. Hmm. Like, we are not sure if our lives will always be vocationally tied to the local church, but we believe in it, and we would love to see the local church representing Jesus just really well, in really Christ-like ways to this area. That what we found when we first moved here believes a lot of stereotypes about what a Christian is and about who Jesus is. So we would love nothing more than for people's stereotypes to be blown out of proportion, because the local church in Seattle is sort of a counterculture, not one of political power, but of like real Christ-like sacrifice and love.
Well, there's a huge difference between a subculture and a counterculture, right?
Yeah, so, totally.
Because I think what you're talking about in Bellevue, Memphis, there's a full-on subculture.
Yeah.
Whereas what we're trying to establish here is a counterculture, you know, and that seems like... a dream for the church around the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd also, man, I think one thing that I've done and talked to people who are back down south.
There's the accent.
Yeah. Is like, there is, and we even felt it. We tried to move back to the South for a minute when things started falling apart at the Landing. And we felt there's like a wealth of resources and a wealth of like talent and people and just strong believing people who live normal lives that are all concentrated like around the South. And it's like, man, what if we could convince some really solid people just to go live their lives missionally somewhere else? It doesn't have to be Seattle, but we sort of felt that when we went back down. We're like, this seems weird and unfair, almost like we're stepping out of a place of need and into a place of plenty, where there's churches on every corner that really believe the Bible. They believe in Jesus. They might not talk to each other, but they do. And, you know, members of churches with like thousands and thousands of members that are all shepherded well by great leading organizations and structures and stuff like that. And yeah, I don't know, man. I'd love to see some people mobilized to places where it's less popular to be a Christian, not to create a subculture, but to, yeah, counterculture.
So. Well, as we've thought about recently, Jesus, people need to live in Seattle, live in this area, right?
Yeah, we've talked about that, like in the whole, yeah. if all the Christians leave, then yeah. What happens?
Yeah, we need the folks. And actually, the cool thing is, Tom and I have gone to conferences in the South before, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
The church is a gift in the South, too.
Even oh, absolutely
for us
it is.
To learn,
yeah.
There's some great things about that. And I think that's a cool thing to keep in mind as well. You know, it's funny, you tried to escape back to the South. I remember when Tom and I interviewed you.
Yep.
And we were both like pretty 100%, this is the guy to be part of our Imprint Church pastoral team. It just made sense, you know. And then we offered you the job and you came back. You're like, sorry, I don't want to work for your stupid church.
That's exactly what I said. That's why I don't call you a special guest as well. So
exactly what still I holds resentment.
It's secret resentment.
I remember I was in the Starbucks in West Seattle and I called you. I was visiting my sister and I'd called you and you're like, I don't think I'm going to get this. And I'm like,
well, can I,
that's not right. I just knew it deep down inside. I'm like, that's wrong.
Can I back up and just tell kind of a quick, cool story? The way that I
Please
met
do.
Rex was he mentioned Andy was good at like working with other churches and their church had started in the health and wellness building of the senior center.
That's right.
Some years prior.
Oh, that's right.
And they had raised money through the North American Mission Board and individually, I think, as a church, and outfitted this trailer. They hired a company to come out and basically look at the building and design all the church stuff that they would need for this building. And they built this custom cabinets and everything that you need for audio and for all the kids ministry. And they packed it into a trailer that was literally everything could just fit in like a perfect puzzle piece, like Jenga. And then that's what they did every Sunday. Well, then they were using that over in Kenmore when they were meeting in that place. But then when that place was shutting down, and as Rex said, they had to move to a Saturday night church. They no longer needed that trailer. Well, I'm freaking out because I'm trying to figure out how are we going to figure out all the stuff that we need because we had signed on to plant Imprint Bothell in that same space that the Landing Church had been in. Somehow Andy and I connected, and he was like, well, we don't need our trailer anymore, so why don't you just rent it from us? And so literally the Lord gave us a trailer that was perfectly outfitted for the space that we were moving into at the senior center.
And it's parked over there, right?
No, not anymore.
No, not anymore. It was a different trailer.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
So then we went over to the Landing Church on one of their final Sundays to help, basically to allow them to show us how they set up their stuff. And Rex was there. That's when I first saw him like setting up to lead worship. I was like, oh, this guy's pretty good. Like he's talented. And then when we finally were going to get ready to move into the building, this was in January. I don't know if you had heard yet that Andy was leaving, but I asked Rex if he would come out and help train our team on how to use all the stuff. So we have pictures of Rex with our planting team.
I think I'm in like the first or second picture on Imprint Bothell's Instagram page, actually.
That's hilarious.
It's funny. He was still at the Landing Church, so he wasn't even with us. And then I think, was it in February that I saw you at Social Grounds? He had just heard maybe a week prior or so.
I think we had just told our church like a week or two before is what happened.
So I walk into Social Grounds and I see Rex there. And I'm like, this is the Rex. I love this guy. Like this guy helped us, you know, launch, and we had been going for maybe like a couple weeks or something. I don't know, maybe it was March. I don't really remember. But I was like, how are you doing? And he wasn't doing well. He had just found out that, you know, Andy was leaving and they didn't know what was happening with the Landing Church. And I was like, okay, man, I was like, I can't promise you anything, and this might be even premature for me to say this, but
it was not the first thing you said, by the way. You asked how I was doing first, and like, you know, you sat and I think you prayed for me first, which was great. And then after that,
then I was like, okay,
it wasn't like the opportunity.
I think I did show some compassion and talk to him about it, just kind of acknowledged, wow, that must be really hard. And now, like,
by the way,
we have this position that was like basically like worship and communications and graphics and all that stuff, and kind of a unicorn position. And that's kind of, Rex did everything over there. He's multi-talented, multi-gifted. And mm-hmm. so I was just like, I can't promise you this, but, you know, I'd love to send you this job description. And so that got the ball rolling. And we went through the whole interview process with Rex, and he was interested, and he met with our board. He met with our lead team. We offered him a job. And then he said, then he went, he had, just had a trip back south, and he said no, right? So yeah. Then you should take over the story.
I lent you a book, and so I was like, our staff likes to read this book to kind of talk about how to do ministry together.
That's true. Yeah, so there's a book called Five Dysfunctions of Team.
Yeah.
It's helpful. And Darren lent it to me, and he said, hey, if you kind of want to understand how we operate as a staff, this is a helpful book, so you can kind of come in not blind. So I read it. I think I read it twice. Not to brag. I think I read it twice. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to like really kind of know what I was stepping into in that kind of way. But you did say, I'm going to lend you this. And you also said, I would love to get it back.
Yeah.
I remember that. So
we walked. Probably because people take my books and never give it back so often.
Does anybody out there have any of my books?
I know people have my books, man. But we had, you know, we walked through that interview process, and we liked Imprint, but we also, we had talked to a church that a friend of mine was at back down in the South, and it seemed easier to just leave the Northwest completely. Mm-hmm.
And you had that vision, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To leave the Northwest completely than to pivot communities. Yeah. 'Cause that seemed really hard. Mm. That said, we did not want to leave the Northwest. Mm-hmm. So it was a tearful decision. This seems like the easier relational thing to do. And so we told Darren no. And I think you had a capo of mine. You borrowed a capo from me, and I borrowed a book from you.
Yeah,
and
so
I was like, I'll just get it to you. And Darren said, man, if you need a place to go to church while you guys are still here, you're
That's
welcome
right.
at any time.
That's right.
So we decided to try to go to the South, and we prayed, like, Lord, shut this door if this isn't what you want us to do. And I really didn't, we weren't wanting to leave here, but understanding like this might be what's best for our family. And we pray that a few days later, that door ends up closing for a couple of reasons I can talk about probably better offline. But yeah, no harmed relationships or anything like that. But the job that we had accepted ended up being different than we thought it was when the final.
And you found this out after you had turned down the job at Imprint.
Yes, found that out after we turned down the job at Imprint. And so...
like, dang it!
I think it was 2 weeks before Naomi was born. We don't have... You know, we ended up rejecting what ended up being the job there back in the South. And so we don't have anything. We don't know what's going on. I've been welcome to stay on at The Landing, which was becoming Awakening Church, as long as... and we needed for, you know, for a reasonable amount of time. And yeah, we didn't really know what was going to go on. So I thought, like, I'm going to go get a job at Starbucks or REI or something, because, you know, we're going to have a baby in 2 weeks and I don't have any kind of future job lined up here. We don't know what's going on.
Because you did not feel that you could come back to us and say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, no, did not.
I think you'd said you thought the job was probably filled, because this has been a month or
something,
right?
It had been a couple weeks for sure.
Okay, yeah.
And so we had not, we thought we were moving across the country, so we had not unpacked anything for like nursery or whatever. So Kinsey said, everything in our life seems really up in the air. Can we do something definite? Can we like set the nursery up?
Yeah.
And I said, sure. So we took down the bookshelves out of the extra room, all that stuff, put furniture together, get the bookshelves downstairs. And I realized as we're putting books back on the shelves that I still have Five Dysfunctions of Team for Darren. I was like, oh, dang it. He said he wanted this back. I said, Kinsey, I'm sorry. Like, this is weird, but he said he wants this back. And so I'm going to go do a weird walk and give it back. So I wrote a post-it note in it and ran over here to drop it off and saw Jenny at the front desk, asked if Darren was here. He wasn't. He was probably at Starbucks or something. And dropped it off. She asked if we were excited to move back. I said, well, we're not moving anymore. And then Ben Acone was here at the time, and he kind of popped his head out. He's like, what's that about you not moving anymore? and so I kind of gave a short version of what was happening. I get back home to my apartment, and I think we went and led a prayer meeting that night for our church. As I'm opening the door to my apartment, I get a text from Darren. It says, hey man, let's have lunch tomorrow.
I was going
to
say, I called you that night or something.
You texted
me.
You said, let's have lunch tomorrow. and talk about you doing ministry at Imprint.
Yeah.
And so we met at Mediterranean Kitchen.
Yeah, that's right.
You changed my life in two ways there.
That's where the Lord meets us.
Yeah.
Tom and I had a moment there too.
Yeah. So we talked and we were blown away that the opportunity was still on the table. And yeah, we accepted the
second
time.
If you find a unicorn, you don't pass up on a unicorn.
No, but
that's
yeah.
That's Rex Gorman.
So we happily accepted because we liked Imprint from the start. We thought God had us leaving here, and we were thrilled when he didn't. So we feel like we got a second season in the Northwest, and we're grateful for that. And we feel like we found home at Imprint in a big way, and we're grateful for that. So,
sweet. Yeah. And now you're a famous podcast host. I mean,
now
look at what
I'm
the
a
Lord
famous
has
podcast
done.
Host
with our millions of followers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, be totally. Sure to check out our Patreon for. Yeah, just kidding.
Like
yeah.
and share this with all your friends.
Yeah, oh ring gosh. The bell, whatever you're supposed to do.
Be sure to like and subscribe.
Yeah. Well, dude, Rex, we are so grateful for you. Yeah. It's great to have you on this team. Like your heart for ministry, your heart for people, your emotional intelligence, like helps our team, helps our church. And it even comes through when you lead worship. So you do that pastorally. Speaking of performative, a lot of people lead worship performatively. You don't. You lead worship out of who you are, and it gives us a pastoral moment on Sunday mornings, even during the music. So, and thanks for leading other people to lead worship as well.
And
so,
I also, just as an encouragement to you, Rex, I had lunch with somebody yesterday, new to our church, a new family. And when I was asking them how they ended up at Imprint or what led them to land with us, he said, well, we really were drawn in by the worship. We really love Christ-centered songs, not songs that are, declaring my emotions and my feelings. There's a place for that, that devotional type of worship song, but really the God-centered, Christ-centered focus of worship is what basically led their family to be here, to want to be here.
Praise the Lord. Yeah. That's awesome.
Grateful for you, brother. It's awesome. Thanks for sharing your story with us.
You got
today.
It. Yeah.
If you want to reach out to Rex, it's rgorman@imprintchurch.org and say hi to him. He would be glad for you to buy him Lifted Taco
or Mediterranean Kitchen.
Or Mediterranean Kitchen. And the Lord evidently meets people in Mediterranean Kitchen.
That's where it happens.
I think you can actually sit back inside there again.
I think you can, yeah.
Because even during when the COVID thing went out,
we sat outside
still sitting
once or
outside.
Twice, I think. Yeah.
Although the weather is getting a little nicer. The longest, everyone's looking at me like I'm an alien. It's still pretty cruddy around here.
It is.
But man, we are grateful for you, special guest Rex Gorman.
Grateful
special
for you
guest.
I am grateful for you people. If you're listening to this at Imprint Church, you guys.
What do you mean, you people?
You
people.
You know what I mean.
You guys.
Not Southerners.
When I say,
is what he
when
said.
I say you people,
he's calling us out.
I'm talking to not the people in the room. I'm talking to the people in the room and everybody else.
But oh, y'all.
We are grateful for the way you guys have brought us in. We don't have family here, and we feel like we have a family at Imprint Church. So thank you for that. Really, thank you.
Awesome.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us for another rousing edition of Abound in Hope. And see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.